for the much-needed words of exhortation this morning. Our brother Mark Snowblin will deliver those words for us.
Well, good morning, everyone. Last week in his exhortation, Brother Jeff spoke about the problem of pride. And it's an issue I was thinking about this week, certainly in context of the readings we've had in Luke's Gospel in the last few days. As Jeff said, it's a human characteristic that's been part of the human experience since the beginning. And especially today, he said, there's this pressure on us to believe in ourselves, to be confident in ourselves. And I suppose we could argue that, to a degree, pride can be positive. It can be healthy. We can define it as something like, satisfaction in ourselves or in our accomplishments. And that can be innocent enough, I suppose. There's lots of things we can be proud of and even should be proud of. A hard day's work, satisfaction in a job well done. If we've just graduated, we're proud of all that hard work that we put into it that's paid off. We can be proud of our kids, usually. There's lots of things that we accomplish that we can be proud of. And, being proud of something makes us feel good, doesn't it? It motivates us. That can be healthy, right? Better than feeling bad about ourselves, because that's not healthy, is it? But pride is something that can be infectious. And at its worst, as Jeff suggested, it can lead to a glorification of ourselves and our achievements. And that's not so innocent, is it? That's not so healthy. Being satisfied with ourselves feels good, doesn't it? You know what feels even better? When people notice us, when people talk about us or praise us for our achievements. It makes us feel justified, gives us confidence. It makes us feel that what we're doing is right. If we don't hear it enough, I suppose we'll start talking about it. We'll start talking about ourselves, talking about our achievements. We'll put on a show. In its worst form, it's addictive. It's one thing to be satisfied with ourselves or to be praised, but it's another thing to glorify ourselves, and that's an easy trap to fall into. Because we like to sell ourselves, don't we? We like to talk about our strength. It's good for our image. We love it when other people notice. We love praise. It feels good. And isn't that better than the alternative? Because the alternative doesn't feel good. Not having any accomplishments, not being noticed, not being praised, being wrong, doesn't feel good. It makes us weak, doesn't it? Now, pride had become a very real problem within the Jewish elite, and we can see this in our readings from Luke in the past few days. The Jewish leaders loved to be noticed, didn't they? They loved to talk about their accomplishment, loved to be praised, loved to be right, loved to glorify themselves, desperately wanted recognition and approval from the people, wanted to be seen as religious, as perfect. They wanted to be right. They had to be right. They were addicted to it. It was a sickness that the Jewish leaders were infected with, and they couldn't see the cure or didn't accept it, even though it was right in front of them, or maybe because it was right in front of them, and they were too proud to see it. Jesus was preaching something different, wasn't he? He was teaching repentance. And that means a change in your life, a change in your thinking. And that usually means that you're wrong, doesn't it? And they couldn't get past that. Pride wouldn't let them. And we can definitely see this conflict developing between Jesus and the Jews in our readings in Luke. I'd like to turn to Luke chapter 5. Let's look there first. And Brother Jason spoke about this a couple weeks ago during the fraternal weekend. The Pharisees, the teachers of the law, were beginning to question Jesus and watch him closely, looking for any way to accuse him. In part because Jesus was becoming popular with the people. He was performing miracles and making statements that infuriated them. And also because he didn't see things the way they did. And this threatened them. And there was no way that they could let him be right. And that's the context of verses I want to read in Luke chapter 5. So let's turn to Luke 5, beginning at verse 27. After this, Jesus went out and saw a tax collector by the name of Levi sitting at his tax booth. "Follow me," Jesus said to him. And Levi got up, left everything, and followed him. Then Levi held a great banquet for Jesus at his house, and a large crowd of tax collectors and others were eating with them. So here we're introduced to Levi, or Matthew, the tax collector. Someone who I'm sure would have been resented by everyone in society. From the common people who he collected taxes from, to the elite. And I think also that at the time, the righteous were easy to see. It's like everyone knew who they were. And so were sinners. And I suppose Matthew, as a tax collector, might have just been a little bit more obvious than everyone else. But he was clearly looking for a change. He may already have been a follower of Jesus in his heart. And I think that has to be true because Jesus saw something in him that others didn't. So when Jesus said, "Follow me," Matthew got up, left everything, and followed him. And then he invites all his friends to see Jesus, to meet with him, likely wanting to share what he had found. And who were his friends? Well, there were two views on that. Maybe they were people who were looking for what Matthew had found. That's why Jesus welcomed them. The Pharisees weren't so understanding. They were watching Jesus, of course. So they noticed this. Verse 30. The Pharisees and the teachers of the law who belonged to their sect complained to his disciples, "Why do you eat and drink with tax collectors and sinners?" It says they complained. You know, why would Jesus do with this? Why would Jesus meet with these people, these sinners? The very kinds of people they tried to distance themselves from. And this makes Jesus' reply to them all the more ironic, doesn't it? Because the Jewish leaders who saw themselves as the healers of the people were in greater need of healing themselves than the sinners that they despise so much. Jesus replies in verse 31, "It's not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. I've not come to call the righteous, but sinners to repentance. And so by making this statement, Jesus not only establishes that he was in the right place, in his rightful place, but he also identifies the Pharisees' needs as well. And we know, of course, that this didn't mean that they were righteous. It just meant that they didn't believe that they were sick. And the Pharisees were actually creating two groups in their minds, themselves and everyone else. And this not only prevented them from doing their job, but also from getting the help they so desperately needed. That separation, that distance they wanted to keep, separated them from forgiveness and salvation. They didn't see it. They didn't see their need. I think Matthew did. Those that were meeting with him likely did as well. A repentant sinner recognizes his need. That's why Jesus called Matthew. That's why Matthew responded, and that's why Jesus was where he was. Matthew saw Jesus for who he really was, and that brought him closer to salvation, far closer than those who despised him so much. Now, in a reading from Luke chapter 7, which we read this morning, we see the example of two other people who saw Jesus for who he was, who needed something, and who found what they were looking for in him. To the Jewish leaders, they might have fallen into that category of the despised or the sinners, those who had no hope. But Jesus saw them differently. The first is the centurion, which we find at the beginning of the chapter, in verse 1. Chapter 7, verse 1. When Jesus had finished saying all this, in the hearing of the people, he entered Capernaum. There a centurion's servant, whom his master valued highly, was sick and about to die. The centurion heard of Jesus and sent some elders of the Jews to him, asking him to come and heal his servant. When they came to Jesus, they pleaded earnestly with him. This man deserves to have you do this because he loves our nation and has built our synagogue. Now, typically a centurion would have been aligned with an opposing power and wouldn't have had a lot of support or fans among the Jewish people, much like a tax collector. But there was something different about him. Even the Jewish leaders had to acknowledge that. They actually appealed to Jesus on his behalf. Maybe they felt obligated to. But still, there was something different about this man. He was sympathetic to the Jews. He cared deeply about his servant. And even though he held a high position within society, there was a humility about him. I think we can say that he was a good man. And he saw something in Jesus, and Jesus saw something in him. So Jesus went. Verse 6, it was not far from the house when the centurion sent friends to him, saying, Lord, don't trouble yourself, for I do not deserve to have you come under my roof. That is why I did not even consider myself worthy to come to you. But say the word, and my servant will be healed. For I am myself a man under authority, with soldiers under me. I tell this one, go, and he goes, and the other, come, and he comes. I say to my servant, do this, and he does it. It seems he didn't feel worthy to speak to Jesus face to face, likely because he believed who he was. This wasn't a desperate man looking for that, you know, that unorthodox cure, you know, someone who's willing to pursue all the angles health-wise to help a friend, to help someone who's sick, someone who's close to them. I think he believed that Jesus had the power of sickness, even just by saying the word. Verse 9, when Jesus heard this, he was amazed at him and turned to the crowd following him and said, I tell you, I have not found such great faith, even in Israel. Then the men who had been sent returned to the house and found the servant well. Jesus makes a very meaningful statement here. This kind of faith certainly wasn't found in the Jewish leaders. What they couldn't grasp, what they couldn't see, or what they didn't want to see was seen by this unlikely but deserving man. And he was commended for it and rewarded for it. The second example that we see in Luke chapter 7 is found at the end of the chapter when one of the Pharisees invites Jesus over for dinner. And this is a passage that Brother Jason also spoke about 2 weeks ago, but I'd like to consider it again this morning. And it may seem strange that a Pharisee would invite Jesus into his home, you know, considering the conflict between them. But Jesus was equally willing to meet with him, wasn't he? Equally willing to meet with him as he was with the tax collectors and the sinners. And why? Well, because Jesus came to heal the sick. Matthew, his tax collector friends, the sinners, the scribes, the Pharisees, Jesus' disciples, everyone. They all needed the physician. So once again, in these verses, Jesus is in his rightful place. And of course, as we read, we begin to see that Pharisaical view again. That need to separate themselves from sinners. Verse 36. Now one of the Pharisees invited Jesus to have dinner with him. So he went to the Pharisee's house and reclined at the table. When a woman who had lived a sinful life in that town learned that Jesus was eating at the Pharisee's house, she brought an alabaster jar of perfume. And as she stood behind him at his feet weeping, she began to wet his feet with her tears. Then she wiped them with her hair, kissed them, and poured perfume on them. This woman was looking for something. She was a sinner. She was sick. Simon knew it. The whole town knew it. She was easy to categorize. The most important thing was that she knew it. And she knew where to go to be healed. She wasn't going to find any comfort in Simon, was she? In verse 39, Simon thinks if Jesus really were a prophet, he would know what kind of woman she was and keep his distance. I mean, Simon would have pushed her away, especially if she was at his feet. But Jesus knew exactly who she was, exactly who Simon was. He was there for both of them. Both of them needed him, but only one of them realized it. So Jesus said to Simon, I have something to tell you. He tells him a parable, beginning in verse 41. Two men owed money to a certain moneylender. One owed him 500 denarii, and the other 50. Neither of them had the money to pay him back. So he canceled the debts of both. Now, which of them will love him more? Simon replied, I suppose the one who had the bigger debt. Simon, of course, answers correctly. It was obvious in this situation who would have had the greater response to forgiveness. And it would have been easy for Simon to see this woman's role in the parable. Sinners were easy to identify, right? They were at Matthew's house, and there was one at Jesus' feet now. That was easy to interpret. But what Simon didn't see was his role in the parable, because he was at least a 50 denarii sinner. He was at the very least a sinner. He belonged at the feet of Jesus too. But his pride wouldn't let him get there. And so forgiveness was only available at this moment to the woman who truly saw her need and saw Jesus as her physician. And so Jesus says to the woman in verse 48, your sins are forgiven. Your faith has saved you. She knew who she was. She knew what she needed, and she knew where to find it. So both of them had a debt they couldn't repay. Forgiveness was available for both of them, according to the parable. But the difference between Simon and the woman was their attitude, their correct perception of themselves. And that's why only one of them was at Jesus' feet. Simon had welcomed Jesus into his home, but not into his heart and not into his life. Now, I think the best example of this contrast in attitudes is found a few pages ahead in the parable of the Pharisee and tax collector who went to the temple to pray. Luke 18. Luke 18, verse 9. To some who were confident of their own righteousness and looked down on everyone else, Jesus told this parable. Now, this parable may not have been directed directly at the Pharisees, but it was definitely directed at the attitude that they had about themselves and about others. And the main characters, of course, are a Pharisee and a tax collector. Verse 10. Two men went up to the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. The Pharisee stood up and prayed about himself. God, I thank you that I'm not like other men, robbers, evildoers, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week and give a tenth of all I get. But the tax collector stood at a distance. He would not even look up to heaven, but beat his breast and said, God, have mercy on me, a sinner. I tell you that this man, rather than the other, went home justified before God. For everyone who exalts himself, everyone who glorifies themselves, will be humbled. And he who humbles himself will be exalted. So we can see these two contrasting attitudes, just like we saw in Simon and the woman. One that was acceptable to God, and one that wasn't. The Pharisee in the parable considered himself righteous. The tax collector didn't. And it was his attitude that was acceptable, a fact that would have completely escaped the Pharisee. The Pharisee wouldn't have accepted that this tax collector, this sinner, was more acceptable than himself. You know, he considered himself very righteous as he strutted into the temple, didn't he? He was a proud man, standing where everyone could see him and hear him. He only mentions his virtues, his accomplishments. He seems very satisfied with himself. He's not an evildoer. He's not a thief. He hasn't committed adultery. But he wasn't acceptable in God's eyes, and he didn't even know it. The tax collector, his attitude was completely different. He stood at a distance, probably so no one could see him or hear him. But God heard him. God saw him. The Pharisee glorified himself. He was proud of himself. But the tax collector humbled himself and could only plead for mercy. So both these men went to the temple to pray. Both were sinners, but only one of them recognized his need. And that made him acceptable, and that made forgiveness possible. I think that's what we have to consider as we examine ourselves now. The Pharisee didn't examine himself, did he? He examined the tax collector. He wasn't anything like him. He was right. The tax collector was wrong. He was proud, and the tax collector was weak. He was creating that contrast between himself and sinners. He was separating himself from that weak position that comes with being wrong. And because of that, he was separating himself from forgiveness. The Pharisee didn't examine himself. He glorified himself. We're here to examine ourselves, and if we're honest, there's only one position that we can be in. Maybe being wrong and accepting that we're sinners. That humility leads to forgiveness. There's a difference between pride and humility. But in the end, it's those who humble themselves that will be exalted.